Chapter 2. The Big Event. Most people didn't know Summer was my girlfriend, even our closest friends. Because Summer was the daughter of a billionaire and a famous model, she'd been in the public eye since the day she was born. Gossip websites and trashy magazines were always running stories about her, most of which were completely wrong. A few weeks before, she had been in the audience at a boy band concert in San Antonio, and the next day, the rumor machine announced she was dating the lead singer. One website even claimed they were engaged, despite the fact that neither was old enough to drive. In truth, Summer had never had a boyfriend before me, and she worried all the magazines and websites would go nuts if they found out about us. "Our friends aren't going to tell the press that we're dating," I'd argued. "No, but they'll tell someone," she'd countered. "And those people will tell other people, who'll tell other people, who'll tell other people. Sooner or later, the media will find out about it, and the next thing you know, there'll be TV crews camped out on your lawn." "We don't have a lawn," I pointed out. "We live in your dad's crummy trailer park." We were supposed to have a lawn, along with landscaping and a communal swimming pool and all sorts of other nice stuff, but J.J. McCracken appeared to have forgotten about putting it all in. All we had was a murky sinkhole that excelled at breeding mosquitoes. "You know what I mean," Summer said. "Trust me, the longer we can keep this a secret, the better." I figured she knew more about being in the public eye than I did, so I didn't tell anyone we were dating, except for my parents. I didn't like lying to them, and they would have figured it out anyhow. I'd suddenly been spending a lot more time with Summer. Summer and I never really spent much time at my house, because even though we had a new double-wide trailer, courtesy of JJ, it was still smaller than Summer's mother's closet. Sometimes we went to the McCrackens' ranch because they had a pool and tennis courts and stables with horses and a chef who'd studied in Paris. But most of the time, we just hung out at Fun Jungle. Because Summer was JJ's daughter, she could arrange lots of cool things, in addition to swimming with dolphins, like getting to sneak onto rides without having to wait in line like everyone else. Although Summer didn't live at Fun Jungle like I did, she still considered it her second home. The park had been her idea, back when she was a little girl, and she'd spent much of her life watching it all come together. Since she loved animals, she'd been extremely involved in the development, making plenty of suggestions her father had actually used. So she knew the park as well as I did, maybe even better. As we raced through Fun Jungle from Dolphin Adventure, we both knew every shortcut, agreeing on the fastest route without even needing to discuss it. We dodged between Shark Encounter and the Petting Zoo, circled Monkey Mountain, and cut right through the underwater section of Hippo River until we arrived at the entry plaza. It was a madhouse. To our surprise, even though it was still a half hour before the park opened, hundreds of people were gathered at the front gates. While Li Ping's arrival at Fun Jungle was huge news, J.J. McCracken had still hoped to keep the actual moment a secret. Over the past year, almost every time Fun Jungle had tried to hold a big media event, it had ended in disaster. At the gala opening of Carnivore Canyon, someone had let a tiger loose. When the park had made a big deal about getting a koala, it had been stolen. And when a formal funeral was attempted after Henry the Hippo died, the crane holding the coffin had dropped it, splattering the front row of dignitaries with hippo guts. So JJ was worried about tempting fate yet again. Pete Thwacker, Fun Jungle's head of public relations, had decided to use the secrecy of the event to sell the story. Pete didn't actually know that much about animals. He'd recently stated on live television that the primary food source for coyotes was roadrunners. But he knew how to work the media. Instead of getting the public excited about the exact day the panda would arrive, he made the whole thing a huge mystery. Li Ping was coming, but when? He advertised on billboards, TV, and radio stations around the country. "The first person to see Li Ping the panda could be you." It worked like gangbusters. The story trended on every social media platform. Guests flocked to Fun Jungle, hoping they might be lucky enough to be there the day the panda arrived. Of course, JJ and Pete had known the exact delivery date all along. It had all been planned out months ahead of time with the rigor of the D-Day invasion. The idea was to have Li Ping arrive in late April so that she would grab even more media attention, diverting tourists from other theme parks like Disney World or Universal Studios and enticing them to plan their summer vacations at Fun Jungle. But up until that moment, everything was supposed to be shrouded in secrecy. Almost no one was told the actual arrival date. Even Summer was kept in the dark. She had only learned the night before, then promptly called me to share the news. Li Ping was being shipped to Fun Jungle from the San Diego Zoo, where she'd been born, in a custom-made, climate-controlled semi-truck. A male panda, Shen Zhu, would be flown out from China later in the summer with the hope that they'd breed. Originally, Pete had hoped to make an event of Li Ping's transit across the country. He'd wanted to christen the truck the Panda Express, splash Li Ping's picture all over it, and have it stop for photo ops in every town along the way. But JJ, fearing disaster, had made him scrap all that. Li Ping's delivery was to be far more clandestine. The truck was specially designed for the panda on the inside, but on the outside, it was made to look like every other truck on the highway, a bland, easy-to-ignore gray. However, it was now evident that all attempts at secrecy had failed. Word had gotten out, and the panda fanatics had arrived in full force. When Fun Jungle had displayed a koala the previous winter, I'd been surprised by how many fans those animals had. But that was nothing compared to how crazy people were for pandas. Pandas, it seemed, were the rock stars of the animal world, right down to having groupies. The people who worked at Fun Jungle had already taken to calling them pandamaniacs. Maybe it was because pandas were cute. Maybe it was because they were rare. Probably it was a combination of the two. Whatever the case, panda fans were more intense than those for any other animal. For starters, they dressed up. Almost everyone gathered outside the front gates had worn a combination of black and white. Many were merely in panda-themed t-shirts, but a surprising number wore panda costumes or had painted their faces. Almost everyone had a set of Li Ping ears, which had been available for purchase at Fun Jungle for weeks. They were quite similar to the Mickey Mouse ears at Disney World, except the ears themselves were a lot smaller, which allowed J.J. McCracken to avoid accusations of copyright infringement and save on production costs. Instead of looking like a large group of pandas, however, the big mass of black and white really looked more like an Antarctic penguin colony. Meanwhile, the press had come out in full force as well. News trucks from every local TV station, along with a few national ones, were parked outside the gates, cameras at the ready. Inside the park, at the far edge of the entry plaza, stood a much smaller, considerably less enthusiastic contingent of people. J.J. McCracken was there, in his customary jeans and cowboy boots, looking infuriated about the crowds. Pete Thwacker stood beside him, dressed in a fancy three-piece suit. Then came Chief Honecker, Fun Jungle's head of security, in a freshly starched khaki outfit that looked more like something a five-star general might wear. After that came my father, ready to document the panda's arrival with three separate cameras, two digital SLRs and one video recorder, dangling from straps around his neck. The last person was Mom, who was helping Dad out that morning, with two camera bags slung over her shoulder. She and Dad were the only ones in the group who'd had the sense to wear shorts and t-shirts in the heat.
"It'd be bad enough to have all the panda freaks out there," JJ was grumbling as Summer and I arrived. "But how the heck did all the news stations get wind of this? What holy idiot tipped them off?"
Pete squeaked, looking embarrassed. JJ wheeled on him. He was nearly a foot shorter than Pete, even with lifts in his cowboy boots. But JJ's personality was so big, he somehow seemed just as tall.
"You told them?"
"Not all of them," Pete mewled, "but I thought it'd be a good idea to offer exclusive access to a few stations."
"Jack's the only one who was supposed to have exclusive access," JJ snapped, pointing at my father. "So we could control the story this time. If you offer exclusive access to a bunch of people, then it's not really exclusive anymore, is it?"
"No," Pete admitted, "but the news stations all get more excited when they think they have exclusive access. Only it looks like the few I told must have blabbed to all the others."
"As well as half the country," Honecker muttered, nodding to the crowds. "And that crowd's going to get real angry when they find out the panda's not even going on display for a month," JJ said.
"A month?" Pete echoed, going pale. "What do you mean?"
The panda has to go into quarantine at the hospital, JJ explained, just like any other animal that shows up here. We have to isolate it to make sure it doesn't have any diseases that'll infect the rest of my animals. You know the drill, Thwacker.
Yes, Pete whined, but I figured since the panda would be on display by itself, that would count the same as being quarantined.
No dice, JJ replied. Federal regulations state it has to be done in an official quarantine facility for 30 days, and Doc says it could be even longer.
Longer? Pete gasped, looking like he might pass out.
The men were all so focused on the issue, no one noticed Summer and me arriving except Mom. She stepped away to greet us, ran her fingers through my wet hair, and smelled them. Salt water, she observed. Someone's been swimming with the dolphins again.
Wow, Mrs. Fitzroy, Summer said, impressed. I see where Teddy gets the detective genes from.
You did go with permission, right? Mom asked.
Yes, I groaned, even though Mom's suspicions were probably justified. Summer and I had snuck into exhibits before, though never merely for fun. We'd only done it to investigate crimes. Olivia Putney was with us the whole time.
So what am I supposed to do here? Dad was asking the other men. Am I filming Li Ping's arrival, or are all the news crews?
You are, JJ replied, cutting Pete off before he could answer. You're the only one I trust around the panda. When that truck gets here, I want you front and center. You go inside the trailer to document Li Ping, and you stay with her until she gets transferred to quarantine. He turned to Pete. That's what exclusive means. The news will just have to be happy with filming the truck.
They won't even get to see the panda? Pete asked aghast. Well, they won't be happy about that.
Well, then, you better go change their minds about it, JJ told him. Flash that big old smile of yours, put a good spin on this, and make sure that crowd doesn't turn into an angry mob.
He checked his watch, then added,
And do it quick. Li Ping's coming in hot.
All right, Pete said. He was obviously annoyed at JJ, but as he turned toward the news crews, his standard, confident, on-camera personality took over. A smile bloomed on his face. He straightened his tie and strode purposefully toward the front gates. The moment the crowd saw him coming, their excitement grew. Everyone started asking when Li Ping was going to arrive.
I assure you all, the long wait for Li Ping is nearly over, Pete announced, and a cheer went up from the crowd.
Honecker sighed.
Sometimes Thwacker can be such a moron, I'm surprised he can walk in a straight line.
He looks good on TV, though, JJ said. Often that's all that matters. Are these crowds going to cause us any trouble?
I think we'll be all right, Honecker replied. I assigned extra security starting at 0600 this morning in case of an eventuality such as this.
No one at the park but JJ knew what Honecker had done before he had taken over security, but everyone suspected he'd worked for some branch of the military, or possibly the CIA. The way he spoke was a big reason why.
Any word from Marge? Mom asked.
Officer O'Malley last reported in at 0800, Honecker replied. Ever since they got past that traffic jam, the trip is gone without a hitch.
Wait, I said, concerned. Large Marge is with the panda?
Mom gave me a sharp stare, displeased with my choice of words.
I mean, Marge O'Malley is with the panda? I corrected.
She is tasked with providing security for Li Ping en route to Fun Jungle, Honecker explained.
Really? I asked, unable to hide my shock. Of all the people in security, you sent Marge?
Since the day I'd first arrived at Fun Jungle, Marge had been a thorn in my side. She had instantly decided I was trouble. Her thought process being, one, I was a young boy, and two, all young boys were trouble. In her determination to prove this, she had often ignored the actual misbehavior of park guests. For example, littering, banging on the glass of the exhibits, or throwing food to the animals, in order to catch me at crimes she merely suspected I was committing. Eventually, I had played a few pranks on her to get her to back off, but they had produced the opposite effect I'd hoped for. Every time I had glued Marge's shoes to the floor or left a gorilla poop in her locker, it had only made her even more determined to bust me.
As a result, Marge had mistakenly tried to pin two major crimes at Fun Jungle on me, rather than looking for the real culprits. The first was the theft of Kazoo the Koala, and Marge's failure to solve it had resulted in her getting demoted from chief of security in favor of Honecker. The second was a rash of thefts at candy and ice cream shops around Fun Jungle. Once Marge had realized I wasn't responsible for those either, she'd had a small nervous breakdown. She'd cried and admitted that she'd never be able to prove I was as bad as she thought, so she might as well give up. Unfortunately, I was the only person who witnessed this. Afterward, Marge pretended like it had never happened. In fact, she even seemed a bit angrier at me for witnessing her moment of weakness. She was still always bad-mouthing me, giving me the stink eye, and trying to pin anything that went wrong at Fun Jungle on me. All of which was proof to me that Marge wasn't a very competent member of the security team. I would never have trusted her to guard a piggy bank, let alone something as important as a giant panda. But then, I wasn't chief of security.
"I know you've had your differences with Officer O'Malley before," Honecker said to me.
"Differences?" Mom echoed. "She tried to send Teddy to juvenile hall twice."
"But when it comes to keeping an eye out for crime," Honecker continued, "she's the most vigilant member of my entire team, and I needed someone vigilant on this mission to be alert for any signs of trouble."
I sighed, aware there was some truth to this. Fun Jungle was so large, it actually qualified as an incorporated city, which meant the security division was a licensed police force. But sadly, it wasn't exactly Scotland Yard. Working security at a zoo usually wasn't a very exciting job, and so it mostly tended to attract guys who'd barely finished high school and who couldn't make the cut for the real police, which explained why an overzealous bonehead like Marge could be considered one of the most competent members of the force.
"What kind of trouble were you expecting?" Summer asked.
"Any kind," Honecker replied. "That panda's worth millions, and technically she's not even ours. She's property of the Chinese government, so I needed someone to sit with the driver of the truck and be alert for the whole trip, and O'Malley was the right one for the job."
"She was also probably the only one who wanted to do it," Summer whispered to me.
"She's only in the cab of the truck?" Dad asked. "Not in the back with the panda?"
"There's no windows in the back of the truck," JJ explained. "You couldn't see any trouble coming from there. And besides, I needed Doc in the back, keeping an eye on Li Ping."
That part I knew. Doc Deacon was the head vet at Fun Jungle and one of the finest zoo vets in the world. I had heard he'd wanted to send one of the vets who worked under him in the truck instead. Traveling in the back of a semi didn't sound like a very enjoyable way to cross the country. But JJ had staunchly refused, insisting that where the panda was concerned, he needed the best man he had.
"So Doc's been riding in the back of a truck for a whole day?" I asked.
"Well, it's not as bad as you'd think," JJ told me. "In fact, we fixed things up pretty darn nice for both Doc and Li Ping. I had the entire interior of the truck customized. Doc has a couch, a bed, and a TV with a DVD player. It's nicer than a lot of hotel rooms I've seen, and Li Ping has her own separate area and all the bamboo she can eat. Frankly, it's probably been like a vacation for the both of them."
I caught Mom and Dad sharing a look. It appeared they didn't think Doc would have considered this a vacation at all, but neither said anything to JJ. My phone buzzed in my pocket. I heard Summers do the same thing, which meant someone was trying to reach both of us at once. I had a pretty good idea who it was before I even checked my phone. As I'd suspected, it was Xavier Gonzalez, my best friend. Xavier was an animal fanatic. He was creating his own zoo at home. His room was filled with aquariums holding lizards and snakes he'd caught in the woods, as well as fish and assorted small rodents. Every week he spent his entire allowance on pet food. He idolized field biologists, like my mother, the way other kids idolized professional athletes. The text said, "I'm at the front gates." Summer and I both turned around. Sure enough, Xavier was at the gates, pressed up against the bars. Like almost everyone else, he was wearing black and white and Li Ping ears, though to my surprise, his outfit was a tuxedo. He waved to us excitedly and shouted something, though I couldn't hear it over the crowd. Xavier's mother stood next to him, obviously there against her will,
The look on her face clearly said she would rather be back home in bed.
"Xavier's here," I told my mother. "Can I go say hi?"
"Of course."
Mom spotted Xavier and waved to him. "I'm going to stay over here," Summer told me.
"You don't want to talk to Xavier?" I asked.
"Sure I do, but..."
A few pandemaniacs near Xavier looked to see who he was waving to, spotted Summer, and shrieked. They seemed even more excited to see her than the panda. Word quickly rippled through the crowd that Summer was around, and soon everyone had whipped out their cell phones and started taking pictures. Even though they were all so far away from Summer, she would probably only be a dot in their photos.
"That's why," Summer finished.
"Oh, right," I said.
"Say hi to him for me."
Summer gave the crowd a friendly wave, which resulted in a roar of approval. Then she slipped behind some landscaping so they couldn't see her anymore, which sparked a chorus of disappointed groans. I headed over to see Xavier, feeling bad for Summer. She knew she was lucky to be so rich, but there were many times when her fame caused her trouble. She rarely had the chance to do anything normal, like eat lunch in a restaurant or play catch in the park, without total strangers accosting her. Instead, she had to either disguise herself or keep herself cloistered. As I approached the gates, I felt the residual effects of her fame. People started shouting at me simply because I'd been near her.
"Who are you? Are you Summer's boyfriend or something? Can you get her to come over here? Tell her I love her."
I did my best to ignore them and focus on Xavier.
"I've been trying to get your attention for 5 minutes,
he chided as I approached. "Sorry," I said. "We didn't see you."
"I've been right here, waving."
I pointed toward his black and white outfit. "Well, you sort of blended in with the crowd." Xavier grew offended.
"These people are wearing T-shirts. This is a tuxedo. I rented it just for this occasion. Do you have any idea how hard it is to find a tuxedo in my size? I had to go all the way to San Antonio to get it."
"It's still black and white." I avoided mentioning that, despite all the trouble he'd gone through to find it, it still didn't fit him very well. But then they probably didn't make a lot of tuxedos in Xavier's size. Not only was he a kid, but he was short and overweight, with a big belly and stubby legs. While the waistband of the tuxedo pants strained over his stomach, the sleeves and legs were bunched loosely around his wrists and ankles. Before Xavier could say anything else about his formal wear, his mother spoke, sounding exasperated.
"Teddy, do you know when this panda is actually going to get here?"
Several other people in the crowd echoed this question. "Soon," I said.
"How soon?"
Xavier's mother pressed. The blast of an air horn echoed in the distance, and a semi rolled into the far end of the parking lot. The entire crowd turned toward it expectantly.
"How about now?" I asked.
A rumble of excitement began. The crowd surged toward the truck. As everyone moved away from the gates, I got a clearer version of Li Ping's ride. It looked like almost every other tractor-trailer I'd ever seen. If it had passed me on the highway, I probably wouldn't have looked twice at it. I looked back toward my parents and saw that they, along with Summer, JJ, and Honecker, were now on the move, crossing the entry plaza. Mom waved for me to join them quickly. I started after them.
"Wait," Xavier yelled to me. "Is there any way you can let me and my mom in to see the panda?"
"I don't even get to see the panda yet," I informed him, although I was secretly hoping that might not be the case. "They're limiting her contact with people so she doesn't get sick." Xavier frowned, like I was being a bad friend somehow. It made me feel guilty, even though I never promised him anything.
"Sorry,"
I said, then ran after everyone else. The crowd was now so amped up I could feel the energy rolling off it. The pandemaniacs began to chant, "Li Ping, Li Ping, Li Ping." TV cameramen clambered on top of their news vans to film the semi's arrival. I passed by the gate where Pete Thwacker was holding court in front of a throng of reporters. "As you can see," he was telling them, mustering as much gravitas as he could, "Li Ping has finally reached the end of her epic journey, and with her arrival, a wonderful new era in Fun Jungle's history begins." The semi veered away from the main gates, heading onto the service road that led to the employee area of the park. It suddenly dawned on the pandemaniacs that, despite all the trouble they'd gone through to greet Li Ping, they probably weren't going to see her at all. The chants of Li Ping faded and were replaced by booing. The crowd angrily returned to the front gates and shook the bars. Someone threw a bottle into the entry plaza. Honecker got on his radio and spoke to his men outside the gates.
"Looks like things are getting ugly out there. Do what you can to calm the crowds, but do not, I repeat, do not use force against anyone. There are news cameras everywhere, and the last thing we need is footage of a Fun Jungle employee roughing up someone dressed as a panda."
As the Fun Jungle security forces moved in on the crowds, JJ, Summer, Honecker, Mom, Dad, and I passed into Fun Jungle's employee area and headed for the animal hospital. Instead of going inside it, though, we looped around to the loading docks. The semi was already there, beeping a warning as it backed up to the building. Dad filmed some footage of this. Marge O'Malley was leaning out the passenger window of the truck's cab, telling the driver how to back up, even though he'd certainly done it many times before without her help.
"Take it slowly now," Marge was saying. "Easy, easy."
"Mission status?" Honecker called to her.
"A-okay," Marge reported. "It all went exactly as planned, Chief."
The semi stopped with the rear doors right at the edge of the loading dock. There was a hiss from the air brakes, and then the truck shuddered as the engine cut off.
"That's perfect," Marge told the driver, even though the truck had already stopped. "Park her right here."
JJ hopped up onto the loading dock. Despite being a bit older than my parents, he was spry as an 8-year-old, not to mention as excited as one. He rapped on the double doors at the rear of the trailer and called out,
"Good news, Doc. You made it. How's our panda doing?"
There was no answer from inside. I figured maybe I couldn't hear Doc's reply, or maybe he was asleep. He'd been on the road for nearly 18 hours straight. JJ seemed concerned, though. He banged on the rear of the truck again, harder now.
"Doc? Answer me. If you think this is funny, it's not."
Now everyone started to grow worried. Summer nervously bit her lower lip. Mom gave me an anxious glance. Dad kept on filming. Honecker called out to Marge again.
"You're sure Doc's back there?"
"Of course I'm sure," Marge said confidently, hopping out of the cab. "Where else could he be? He got in the trailer after our pit stop in Las Cruces, and we've been driving ever since."
JJ banged on the doors one last time, then reached for the handles. It was only now that he and the rest of us noticed something was wrong with the lock. There should have been a standard key-operated deadbolt, but instead there was only a hole with scorch marks around it. JJ yanked on the handles and the doors swung open. The rest of us couldn't see inside the truck yet, as we weren't on the loading dock. JJ could, though, and what he saw made him gasp in shock. The color drained from his face.
"Daddy?" Summer asked, really worried now. "What's wrong?"
JJ was so stunned he didn't even answer. It was one of the first times I'd ever seen him speechless. He simply stared into the back of the truck as though he couldn't believe his eyes. The rest of us scrambled up onto the loading dock as well. Li Ping's cage and all of Doc's furniture were in the back of the truck, exactly where they should have been. But both Doc and the panda were gone.